This is Geeks and Jocks. Welcome back to Geeks and Jocks, episode 187. Recording March 23rd, 2024. This is Ron Sullivan. Glad to have you here. Before getting into this episode, this podcast is on podcasters.spotify.com. You can also find this on Radio Public and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So definitely got some interesting sports stuff to look at, including Shohei Ohtani and some of the stuff with NFL, NASCAR, talk what's faring at the box office, as always, and talk about potentially, you know, some new stuff that might be coming out soon. South Park, in terms of video games, a little bit, especially with earlier this month, Stick of Truth turning 10, and one or two other things here for this episode of Geeks and Jocks. So, without further ado, let's head straight for boxofficemojo.com and talk about the top 10, because the top 5, a little different, but it's mostly the same, with one flip-flopping over the other, and a newcomer at number 3, along with some new ones around the top 10, which isn't saying a whole lot. So number 1, $30.1 million for Kung Fu Panda 4. So repeating at number 1 over the weekend, and its numbers as of the 21st, sitting at 116.4 domestic and 85.5 internationally, just over 200 million. And no doubt it's going to be inching closer and closer to some form of profitability if it hasn't already. I mean, ultimately it comes down to the fact that you don't really have anything much for kids. There's not really any kids' films out right now. And this is probably going to be one of those holdovers. And I'd imagine this upcoming weekend it will still fare pretty decently. Especially for any families that might be looking to see something over the course of the next week or two. Some schools are probably let out already, and some will continue to do so on account of spring break for a number of places throughout the country. So it'll definitely be fascinating to see how it fares this weekend and next weekend, or even the early part of April. At least around me, early showings around Easter weekend and all that. Not too far behind at number 2, Dune Part 2 with $28.5 million. Already faring much better compared to the first one, $215.7 domestic, and just $1 million shy of $514.7 million worldwide. Good legs right now. I mean, I'd imagine still going to hold up a little bit. I don't think people are going to give up quickly compared to some of these other sci-fi movies that have been out over the last couple of years. Number 3, the only newcomer to hit the top 5, Arthur the King at 7.6 over the weekend. The true story about the adventure racer adopting a dog, a stray dog, as he and a team try to do an endurance race. Not faring all too great. 10.2 domestic right now, along with $75,000 internationally. Smaller budgeted film from Lionsgate. I believe the budget was at around $20 million. So it's not going to suffer anything major. I can't imagine this having that strong of a leg for the weekend. Not too far behind, Imaginary at number 4, 5.5 million. This is actually another Lionsgate film. So probably already it's making a little bit of money. But 20.8 domestic right now and 6.5 internationally still has to be somewhat disappointing despite surpassing its budget. I haven't really seen much advertising for it since it came out last week. Hasn't been reviewed well either. Then we get a bigger drop. Number 5, Cabrini at 2.8 million. 14.7 domestic and 270,000 internationally, just barely making it to 15 million. Number 6, Love Lies Bleeding, 2.4 million, just little more than $1,300 shy of 2.5 mil. Open up in just over 1,300 theaters. Making, as of now, 4 million domestic and just over 170,000 internationally. This is one of those films, A24, they are, a smaller based company and they're trying to do what they can with some of these smaller things. I think the last I saw that it was being held to some regard a little bit, but who knows if that's the case now. But then again, probably filmed on the cheap, and some of these smaller films get their time to shine. Number 7, Bob Marley, One Love, 2.2 million over the weekend. Sitting at 94.2 domestic and 75.8 internationally, just making it to 170. At this point, I'm wondering if Paramount is disappointed at all with the numbers, especially considering I think the budget, if I remember reading it, was about 70 million. Which I don't know how you need that much to do something based on one of the most remembered musicians of the 70s. Number 8, One Life. 1.7 in right around almost 1,000 theaters. 2.4 domestic, but obviously the big numbers. 33.5 internationally. This is one of those international films that probably has much more traction over there and probably would be considered a success because of how it fared over. It's weird to think about that because there are some movies that do really well in international markets, particularly some stuff over in the UK, Europe. Actually, I want to look at all the territories for a brief moment because this is a movie set during World War II or just before World War II, saving 600 children from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia. So it's come out actually doing pretty well in France, actually. Came out back in February. There's a number of countries that have had it going for almost a month or over a month. Estonia back in January. Greece, about a month ago, came out in France making 9.2 million. Actually, this came out back in December in Italy. Coming out in other territories. as well. See if the UK has any. 12 million over in the UK. It's been out in a couple areas in Latin America. I guess the point that I'm trying to make with all this is that, European markets probably have a better chance compared to when you have it out. Maybe the subject matter is more enticing in other parts of the world compared to the United States. Sometimes you hit it well, sometimes you don't. Number 9, the American Society of Magical Negroes. I wish I was making that name up. Fact being with this, 1.3, and this was in roughly 150, 160 more theaters than One Life. So far, it is not anything to be happy about. 1.7 domestic, and it's supposed to be a comedy, but being hugely panned right now. Number 10, Ordinary Angels, $942,000. No doubt. Now it's come out in a couple international markets from the sounds of it. Let's see if it's come out. Australia and New Zealand. Okay. $98,000. So 18.5 million dollars worldwide. With roughly 99% of it in domestic numbers. As far as what's out right now, this is from, yesterday's stuff. The Boy and the Heron for wide releases. Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, which is probably going to be the bigger movie, I assume, for anything new this weekend. Luca, which is the third of the Pixar movies that Disney tried putting out. It'd be lucky if it even makes $500,000, if at that. And Immaculate, which is another Sydney Sweeney movie. He's done three movies in the last 4 months have come out with her in them. It was that movie, it was the Madame Web movie last month, and around Christmas, the Anyone But You movie. Horror movie, I mean, basically. Then you got limited releases, Sentinel, West Indies, Sleeping Dogs, You Can Call Me Bill, Late Night with the Devil, Carol Doda topless at the Condor, which is a R-rated documentary set in the 60s. Became a tourist attraction second only to the Golden Gate Bridge. That is interesting. What other limited releases we got? The Heart Stays, Riddle of Fire, Free Time, and Limbo. Then you got a limited release of Galnad, Romeo et Juliet. Maybe a foreign film about Romeo and Juliet. Okay, this next one's interesting. March 26th. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2. So, this ought to be interesting. Not wanting to live in the shadows any longer, Winnie the Pooh, Piglet, Owl, and Tigger make their fight to the town of Ashdown, leaving a bloody trail of death and mayhem in their wake. Now I'm curious. I don't think the first one fared all that well, but This is the result of the copyright or the trademark, I think it's copyright, expiring and Disney having no control over that. And I think the rights on Tigger, if I remember reading something, I think they expired this year or something like that. I honestly forget. So it's going to be fascinating over the next decade or so regarding some of the stuff such as Disney. When you think about, more than just Mickey Mouse, like Donald Duck, Goofy, and some of this other stuff, I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff that is going to be in the public domain, or at least some iteration of it. Not completely, but you're going to notice it more. 27th, the re-release of a movie called Ex Machina. And then fair share of movies coming out on the 29th. Wide releases of A Cat's Life and the Wendigo. And some limited releases, including On the Adamant, Light, Mind, Body, and Soul, A Fragile Flower, The Samurai and the Lie, The Murder of Grace Mullane. So, yeah, I'm sure there'll be more put up here next week, especially with there being the Easter weekend and all that. Now, I'd imagine, as far as new releases go, I would think Ghostbusters Frozen Empire will be the number one movie out of the new releases, whether that gets above Kung Fu Panda 4 or even Dune Part 2, that's another question in of itself. But I would think with the return of the Ghostbusters, along with having the mix of the older and newer generations of the team and a few other things being set in New York City and a couple other related things, I would imagine it would fare well. It's hard to know whether some of this horror stuff will continue to make like big numbers. 'Cause Imaginary not doing all that well, I mean, what does that bring for Immaculate? Speaking of horror, a teaser got put out recently for Beetlejuice, the new sequel to the original 1988 film, directed by Tim Burton. Burton is back actually to direct it. They brought back a few of the cast members. Obviously, they brought back Michael Keaton to reprise his role as the title character. Brought back Winona Ryder and Catherine O'Hara to play Lydia and Dahlia. And new for the film includes the daughter of Lydia, played by Jenna Ortega. And looking at the trailer, I mean, I think they got the casting down for the daughter, I think, pretty good. But with that said, pretty curious about how it fares in September. Early September is when it comes out. This is one of those films I feel like that's been, people have been hearing stuff about whether there be a new film or not, and it's almost like a Top Gun type of situation. Although, granted, Top Gun was huge in 86. Beetlejuice was kind of moderate. So I'm not sure if people will clamor for this sequel. But bringing back Keaton and Ryder should be good, along with some of the newcomers, including, like I said, Ortega. I believe Willem Dafoe's in it, Monica Bellucci, Justin Theroux. One of the weirder castings, and because it typically is the case with having Tim Burton on board, Johnny Depp. Curious to see how that pans out. Seriously. Moving briefly to some television. There's not really a whole lot to talk about, though one of the bigger things right now is a documentary. I don't know where it's on, but it's Quiet on Set: The Dark Side of Kids TV. I think this is on Discovery Plus. And this is about, I think this is supposed to be about what happened behind the scenes at Nickelodeon. When you think of Nickelodeon, you think of a combination of kids' cartoons and live-action kids' shows. It's been pretty much their bread and butter since the early 90s. When you think back to those early days, stuff like Doug and Rugrats, and then early, like, even like mid-90s, thinking of stuff such as All That. And I think that's where the target is for the most part. Anything involving Dan Schneider. And so the questions on whether or not kids were abused on set. Actually, I'm just looking at this right now. It's Blue's Clues host checks in after quiet on set, making grown fans emotional. So, this week, Investigation Discovery released a four-part docuseries, The Toxic Culture Behind Some of the Most Popular Nickelodeon Shows of the 90s and Early 2000s. That's a weird thing to think about because that's Nick Jr. And thinking about that, it's like, unless there was stuff with like specific kids. Documentary revised previously rosy childhood. Yeah, because you think all this good stuff and the quality for a lot of the shows, was up there. A lot of people liked those late 90s, early 2000s shows that were appearing there in huge ratings. They held their own for a few years. Yeah, it's crazy to think about all this stuff. And there's some questions on, others being like sexual abuse. There's a story from like the early 2000s about someone getting arrested for that sort of stuff, like a casting person, and a lot of criticism stemmed towards some of the stars of those shows. It's just, I'm not going to speak specifically on it because that don't really interest me. And besides, this was when I started kind of growing out of kids stuff, early 2000s. So I don't hold nostalgia in the same way a lot of people do. But there's a lot of things that can go on behind the scenes, and the best you can do now these days is to, if you think there's something toxic, to spread awareness, I guess, in regards to what goes on behind the set. But I think a lot of people would rather keep it behind closed doors because of probably potential retaliation, from producers, directors. That's probably part of the reason why Schneider got let go, what, like 5, 6 years ago? Because of stuff going on and people, former stars of shows of his, alleging some of the stuff that happened behind the sets of his shows. It's not a good environment. Not a good environment at all. Be curious to see if there's anything else behind the scenes for like other kids shows, whether there you think about some of the stuff that was on, say, NBC back then, or something, for like Saturday mornings, or anything for that matter. I mean, it's a tough subject, but it's you. If you feel you have the power to tell people what happened, or if there's something going on right now, now is probably the time to say so and take these situations seriously if you're the adults. Do a thorough investigation. Don't just leave it as, eh, it's just kids being kids and just, because some people they suffer. They suffer for many years until it's too late to get their side of the story. Of course, it's like a double-edged sword depending on the situation. Some people could be looking at it for the fame and money to expose someone or other types of crap. It's a gamble. Moving to sports. Going back to concrete for Bristol last week. And there were a lot of lead changes in this race in a five lead car race. Denny Hamlin getting his first win of 2024. Top 10 as follows: Martin Truex second, Brad Keselowski a really good third place finish, Alex Bowman fourth, Kyle Larson fifth, John Nemechek sixth, Chris Buescher another good finish, seventh place, Chase Elliott getting into the top 10, eighth, Ty Gibbs ninth, Christopher Bell 10th. Other notables include Michael McDowell at 11th, Chase Briscoe 13th, Ross Chastain 15th, Ryan Blaney 16th, Daniel Suarez 18th, Eric Jones 20th, Joey Logano 22nd, AJ Allmendinger 23rd, Austin Dillon 24th, Kyle Busch 25th, Bubba Wallace 29th, Tyler Reddick 30th, Austin Cindric 31st, Harrison Burton 32nd, Ricky Stenhouse 33rd, Noah Gragson 34th, and William Byron 35th. Right now, the NCAA March Madness tournament is faring pretty well, and we had some big upsets, including one with Kentucky. As far as what is being seen so far in the first round, kind of most of the stuff is pretty typical. I mean, some notable standout: Oregon beating South Carolina, 11 seed being the 6 seed. That's pretty decent upset. Oakland College beating Kentucky, 14th seed against a 3rd seed. Now, this ain't Oakland, California. Oakland, Michigan, which I was told, I believe yesterday, that they are not too far from Detroit. Actually read something like a quick tweet that the coach has been there for 40 years and they consider it like the biggest win in school history. I mean, to do that against John Calipari, that's pretty good. Pretty impressive. Now, I'm not sure if they'll have this big Cinderella run, but always, I mean, it's always nice to have a story like that. Some pretty big blowouts, including Tennessee with a win over St. Peter's, Iowa State against San Diego State, North Carolina State beating Texas Tech, 11th seed beating the 6. I don't really count 9th seeds beating 8th seeds as like an upset, nor do I think that way with like a 10th seed and a 7th seed. It can go either way. Or South Dakota State, my apologies for that Iowa State game. My apologies. Yale beating Auburn, 13th seed beating the 4th. Very tight game, actually. 78-76. Actually had a game. Colorado beating Florida, 102-100. Nothing else that really stands out. Right now, there is a game being played that you can tell when I'm recording. St. Mary's, California, losing to Grand Canyon, 66-58. 12th seed beating the 5th seed. 3.5 minutes to go in the game. Think the women's basketball should be. Should be beginning if it hasn't already. Yeah, I'm not surprised South Carolina. They kicked butt, 91-39. Actually curious to see, just thinking that. LSU women's basketball suspension. I'm trying to see if there's anything on here because that was crazy a while ago. If there was this fight between LSU and South Carolina. Missed the first game and she serves Camila Cardoso. So I thought some of the bench people got suspended, but I don't think it's the case. Yeah. I mean, good stuff, I guess. One of the more interesting storylines right now is Major League Baseball. Now, South Korea hosted the San Diego Padres and the LA Dodgers. They both split the series, the two-game series. Dodgers won the first game. San Diego won the second one. And right now, there is a lot of question marks into the interpreter of Shohei Ohtani. Some stuff regarding betting scandals surrounding. It's just a long, convoluted issue right now. It's Ippei Mizuhara being fired from the Dodgers, according to like The Athletic and ESPN. Supposedly, he had some gambling debts and he owed a lot of money. And so, from what is told, Ohtani helped pay off the gambling debts. At least that's what is told, and they're gonna look into like some massive thefts and all this other stuff. I'm sure more stuff will develop as time goes on, but definitely creates a stain on Ohtani's image for the time being because, I mean, this is a guy that 2 out of the last 3 years won the MVP in the American League, could have the potential to win it in the National League, although I don't believe he's pitching this year. So he'll definitely benefit from being in the lineup every day as a designated hitter and all that. But the fact being is that I'm not sure if there will be any type of consequences for Ohtani. I can't imagine they'd be that bad because it sounds like the interpreter was betting in of itself. So it's not a situation similar to what happened in the 80s with Pete Rose in terms of betting on games while still being in the league. And that's what ultimately led to Rose's ban from baseball in 89. And just thinking of that, I mean, players in sports, I don't think, are allowed to to bet on games or anything like that. That's how a few NFL players got suspended this year, this past season, to be exact. If there is going to be any sort of punishment, if they think there is some sort of violation for Ohtani, probably just like a big fine or something. I mean, he could afford it. He's getting paid, I think, like $70 million a year, right? But they're definitely, I'm not sure if he'll get a suspension or not. But it definitely creates a bad situation, like I said, for him. And maybe it becomes a focal point if he does get suspended and it hurts the Dodgers' chances. But then again, Dodgers have been probably the best team in the National League for quite a few years. Depends on how you think of all this stuff. They should be having more than just one World Series, which they won in 2020. And actually, that's one of the things, just thinking that with the gambling, there was something I saw in regards to a while ago with Rudy Gobert of the NBA. And I think what was said was along the lines of saying that gambling, what's the, so they fined him $100,000 to make a money gesture towards an official, trying to insinuate, and this was almost a couple weeks ago, to insinuate that the refs are gambling. Which, like I said, there's been some issues with NFL players in terms of getting suspended over gambling. Although, there's kind of a double standard, according to some people, with the amount of betting commercials put on there. I mean, they definitely shoved a lot of that down people's throats, and there are people that do legitimately have gambling issues, and it's something that I think definitely needs to be done in some form of moderation. But I think what Gobert's saying about refs maybe gambling, he might be right, he might be wrong, but it definitely, you don't say that stuff. I mean, I think even if you said it privately, it could leak, and he would have still been fined. There's always that question on whether games are fixed. Doesn't matter if it's NBA or NFL, NHL, whatever. There's always that question in regards to whether or not a game, like a bad call that leads to a game maybe not reaching an over-under, a specific player reaching a specific number of threes made or rebounds, stuff along that line. Or keeping it over-under. I mean, maybe refs do play a factor. But I'd like to think the refs are smarter than that if they were to gamble and not put like $1,000 on the line and things like that. Just saying, but I don't know. I'd like to think there's a lot more integrity out of the refs in sports. I mean, if there's anything to learn from the NBA gambling scandal that happened, what, in 2008, 2007? What was it, Tim Donaghy or something like that? NBA gambling. Nope, not what I wanted. NBA. Oh, man. NBA gambling scandal. This was what? Yep, 2007. It was knowledge of relationships between referees, coaches, players, and owners to bet on professional games. Yeah, this was for well over a year, Tim Donaghy. I mean, that's the thing. It's happened before with it, and I mean, it could potentially happen again. Maybe it doesn't. I mean, who the hell knows? Who knows? Didn't really see too much else with the NFL. I mean, Kenny Pickett to Philadelphia and Justin Fields to Pittsburgh as a backup. I was talking about that with family about that. I mean, I didn't think he would go for like a first or second round pick. I thought maybe it'd be third to fifth round, but sixth round trade, I mean, it opens your mind onto how low of a value Fields has, in part of because of his mediocre play as a passer for Chicago, injuries and things of that nature. I mean, if I'm being honest, I don't think Caleb Williams, who I think will get drafted by the Bears, I don't think that guy's going to fare that well. Even with the additions, with having guys like Keenan Allen there and some of these other players such as DeAndre Swift, it leaves me with a lot of skepticism. A ton of skepticism. I don't think he's going to fare well in Chicago. Chicago just has a whole of quarterbacks. They just don't fare well. And they don't hold on to them for that long. Think the longest they've held a QB since the 80s, not including backups, I want to say Jay Cutler. Cutler was there from 09 to 2016, and there were some years where Cutler looked pretty good. He was probably their best in terms of like stat wise, probably their best passer since Eric Kramer. And that's saying something. Kramer, he had a really good 1995 season. He almost reached 4,000 yards and he almost had 30 touchdown passes. The Bears are like the only team in the league to have not had a 30 touchdown passer or even a 4,000 yard passer. Kind of a testament to a run first type of team, a little bit. Then again, as well, the mediocre quarterback play. I just don't think this Williams guy, if he does get drafted by the Bears, I don't think he's going to fare all that well. I think his career is going to get ruined when he goes to the Bears. Now, speaking of something not getting ruined, coming out on the 26th is Snow Day, a brand new South Park game that is set to come out for, I believe, the PS5, the Xbox Series, line of systems, the Switch, and I'm going to say the PC as well. Yep, comes out on Steam. $30. That's actually pretty reasonable, actually. So, developed by Question LLC, published by THQ Nordic. South Park Digital Studios is involved, so you know there's influence from both Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Multiplayer, I believe a multiplayer type game, I think. Pretty curious about that. But, you know, I mean, it comes around the time that a little more than 10 years ago this month, the Stick of Truth came out for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC. And it almost comes to full circle when thinking about it, because THQ, from what I've read, they were going to be the original publisher for the Stick of Truth. And ultimately, there were some things going on. I believe the game got pushed back a few times. And by that point, THQ got bankrupt. Yeah. Auction off the game to auction off the assets of ownership, later bought by Ubisoft. Just trying to look for South Park. South Park Studios tried to outright buy the rights. That would have cost a lot of money for Parker and Stone. And I don't think their net value compares to what most game companies have. I think there's been stuff that got leaked regarding, like, probably some builds that were seen in the game. But yeah, ultimately, Ubisoft got a hold of it. Obsidian worked on it, who are also responsible for, like, Fallout New Vegas and several other games. At that point, I mean, there wasn't really much to look at with South Park video games. There were roughly five games that came out between 1998 and, I'm going to say, 2009. I want to look because there were a couple games that were exclusive. 2012 was the Tenderman's Revenge game, because there were two South Park games that came out published by Microsoft. So let's see. Got the original that came out at the end of 1998 exclusively on the Nintendo 64, came out a year later on computer and the original PlayStation. That game is looked at a little more worse than when it was new. It's not the greatest game on the planet, and I would say you could do way worse. Although, with it being developed by Iguana, published by Acclaim, it basically running on an engine similar to Turok. So they're probably using an engine, like a modified engine that's been around since '96. You got the Love Shack game that came out a year later. Came out for the Dreamcast as well and computers. And same thing with South Park Rally. South Park Digital Studios being involved for the two South Park games, Let's Go Tower Defense Play, which came out in 09, developed by Double Six. Other Ocean Interactive did the Tenderman's Revenge game. Oh, there's a pinball South Park game developed by Zen Studios. Huh. That's, yeah, I forgot about that. There was also a pinball game from Sega. Forgot, I didn't realize there was a pinball game. There's also Phone Destroyer, which I think was in collaboration with the around the same time as the Fractured Butthole game. So, canceled games. There was one cancel for the Game Boy Color. Oh, it got leaked. Leaked in 2018. Became a reskin game into a Maya the Bee game. Huh. I swear there was an arcade game I think that was being made at some point. Xbox, GameCube, and PS2. That's crazy. But yeah, back to Stick of Truth. I mean, it was like really the first time that people felt they were playing an episode of the show. It felt like the show. It had a graphical look that had the show looking like what it was. You had a story written by the creators. So they were heavily involved in, along with a lot of the stuff during development. The gameplay for Stick of Truth, if you've ever played Paper Mario, that's what it feels like. And it's kind of ironic when you think about it. Actually, I'll have to look that up. I mean, you have a choice of like several classes. Like you pick one out of four classes of what type of fighter you want to be, and you go all around doing these quests. You collect many equipment stuff and weaponry that helps aid you in your battles. You learn to use better, you upgrade with better weapons, you collect money, you got a teammate that will help you. And they actually do, how do I put, and you got to play with most of the South Park crew. Well, all of them actually. Cartman, Kenny, Stan, Kyle, Butters, and Jimmy. And they all offer like unique magic powers and certain weaponry and special things you can do. You get perks via making friends with people. People leveling up with specific powers that you have, such as, I'll use for the fighter class, Assault and Battery, where you get a baseball bat that takes magic points, power points, what have you. And if you time your hit with the baseball perfectly, you can cause them to bleed and then hit them three more times to make them bleed worse and make them lose more health. Same thing, you can cause fire effects, gross out, slow them down from taking another turn, making you get maybe a second turn in before they can get their turn in. It's a really good game. And it surprises me that I never really thought about playing it. And I think the reason why is because I'm not a huge fan of the show. When the show is good, it is probably one of the best shows for cable. But when it gets bad, when the writing gets lazy, it shows. And I feel like I remember seeing commercials for it when it was new and never really piqued my interest. Probably too busy at the same time as well, playing like GTA 5 and just trying to get through college classes at the time. So never really saw much of the game until a couple years after it came out, and then later getting a used copy for the 360 and having a ton of fun with it. I really like the gameplay of it. The graphics are, nice. It emulates the show. The story's funny. I like that the kids are kids and it's not just some lame pop culture incident of, flavor of the month. Although the humor of Stick of Truth, some of the dated pop culture references might, your mileage will vary on that. That's the best way I could say that. It does stutter a little bit on the 360, though nothing too major. Been playing it recently on the PlayStation 3, and Man, the frame rate when you're going through town, it is so rough throughout the game. Thankfully, it doesn't affect the battles. You can still have good matches, well, good battles, and it runs smoothly there. But I mean, if you were gonna have a choice back then, I would have picked 360 over the PS3. Though that's not to say PS3 version's bad. It's still worth playing. It's just that stable frame rate is kind of a little important. I have gotten to play it on the PS4. Runs quite a bit better. It's also one of those games I'm kind of curious about with the Switch, because you got some games from that era that have released on the Switch. So stuff such as, say, L.A. Noire and Rayman Legends. I'm curious to see how they run on things on hardware like the Switch. Actually, I'm kind of curious about Fractured Butthole on the Switch as well. Because then that came out a good while after the PS4, Xbox One, and PC versions came out. Kind of curious. Though I can't imagine it running that badly, given that the engine don't look like it's taxing the system. But then again, maybe the performance ain't that good. It's hard to tell. Oh yeah, by the way, I would say Fractured Butthole, I'd say, is slightly better. One of the negatives I have for Stick of Truth is that it feels like once you got the hang of playing the game, it just ends. And sure, you could do quests after you complete the main game, but it's still a short experience. It's not necessarily bad. You get 15 to 20 hours worth of gameplay out of it, and it's fun, but and actually, the classes don't really do much. I mean, there's not really one class that eclipses the other. Depends on your preference. But still, I would say it's the Stick of Truth is an amazing game. I would say Fractured Butthole is better because I like the strategy type stuff. Reminds me a bit of like a Shining Force type of game with the type of movements you have to make, the way you attack enemies. If you have, say, let's say you're playing as someone with like a ranged weapon, you don't need to be up close and personal. You can be two or three, steps away from the person to use the ranged weapon, and obviously you can get some good damage out of it. Yeah, more content. I'd say you get maybe like 25, 30 hours, which is still pretty good. It's not too short, but it's not overly long, so that's a good thing. The humor, I think, is a lot better. Or maybe I should say a little bit better. I like the superhero stuff for this game. It does a pretty good job with that. Graphics feel like they improved just a little bit, but not by too much. I like the different gameplay elements. It just felt a lot more fun with the different type of gameplay elements put into it. I mean, these are some of the best games you could play for their respective generations, and that's hard to believe. Like, some of the best games of the last generation or two are South Park games. One of the most crude shows ever. And, I mean, you got your Paper Mario-esque type game that really feels like a love letter to people who watched the show from the very beginning, and for people that probably loved what Paper Mario did on the Nintendo 64 and the GameCube. I mean, it's cool that they changed the stuff up, and I'd be curious to see how people feel about the Snow Day game. It really piques my interest what could potentially happen with the game. I mean, if there's ever a reason to get a new system, get a PS5 or an Xbox Series. I mean, this could be it. It's a little strange that it's on the Switch, considering there's no PS4 and Xbox One version. But then again, maybe the numbers for Stick of Truth and Fractured are better than probably what might be thought of. So maybe there's reason to still put out stuff like South Park on there. But definitely excited to see a new game come out after a little over 6 years. Definitely due for a new one. Not sure if the creators will have enough in the tank to do one or two more games, but keep going, I guess. So I'll end this episode here. Like I said before, this podcast is on podcasters.spotify.com. You can also find this on Radio Public and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So that is episode 187. This is Ryan Sullivan. I'll see your listeners on the next podcast. Stay safe, stay protected, take care of yourself, take care, everyone.